This week, NATO leaders wrap up their crucial two-day summit in Lithuania. Topping the agenda, Russia's war in Ukraine and the admission of Sweden to the Defence Alliance. We'll bring you reporting from Vilnius. How will the decisions made at the summit impact Africa as a region? And does the continent need its own NATO-style mutual defence pact? Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. I'm Heidi Adams. It is great to be with you. Leaders of the countries that make up the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, are ending their critical summit in Lithuania. They've been discussing Russia's war in Ukraine as well as expansion of the alliance. VOA's Patsy Wida-Kuswara takes a look at day one of the summit.
On the first day of the NATO summit in Vilnius, Lithuania, the alliance agreed to welcome Ukraine to become a member without giving a time frame.
And then the decision to remove the requirement for a membership action plan, which actually means that instead of two steps to become a member, there will now be one step. We also made it clear that the invitation will be issued when conditions are met.
Stoltenberg's proposal is a compromise. Some leaders, including U.S. President Joe Biden, worry a fast track for Ukraine membership means war with Russia. Meanwhile, Baltic states, including summit host Lithuania, think it will be a deterrence. All members showed support for Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who attended the summit.
Thank you for your help for our defense, for your clear, honest and bold position on your invitation for Ukraine to join NATO.
NATO leaders also renewed their commitment to spend at least 2% of GDP on defense amid Russia's war on Ukraine. Moscow's aggression has driven countries to join the alliance, soon turning it into a 32-nation bloc.
And this is a historic moment, the adding of Finland and Sweden to NATO is consequential.
Sweden's accession was secured after alliance member Turkey dropped its objections, partly because of Biden agreeing to push the sale of American-made F-16 fighter jets that Ankara has long sought to purchase. Sweden has agreed to back Turkey's bid to join the European Union.
I believe that it is now time for consultations at the level of heads of state within the scope of the strategic mechanism, and today I see this meeting at the NATO margins as the first step towards that.
The summit ends Wednesday, and Biden will head to Helsinki to meet with Nordic leaders. Patsy Wida-Kuswara, Viewing News, Vilnius.
Well, joining us now from Vilnius, Lithuania, is Associated Press correspondent Philip Crowther. He's at the NATO summit and joins us now. Philip, thank you so much for being with us. Look, the issue of Ukraine's future NATO membership has loomed large over the summit. A communique put out by the alliance now says there is no new timeline for a future invitation for Ukraine to join NATO. All of this leaving President Zelensky rather frustrated, doesn't it?
Yeah, essentially, yes, because what he wanted from this NATO summit more than anything was that concrete timeline so that Ukraine and its government can imagine when exactly they could join NATO, what exactly they have to do and when they might be able to achieve that. In the end, what NATO leaders here have said and what Volodymyr Zelensky himself has also admitted at his press conference here just a short while ago was that during a time of war between Ukraine and Russia, everybody understands that Ukraine cannot join NATO because essentially that would put the whole of NATO, all 31 member countries now, soon to be 32, it would put all of them on a war path with Russia, essentially. That is an understanding that everybody has. But there is still this frustration. And in fact, Zelensky called these negotiations that were happening here yesterday absurd. Today, we heard a more positive point of view from him. He has shown gratitude, if you will, for the continued military help that Ukraine will be getting. But I think it's fair to say that a lot of Ukrainians believe, and members of the government as well believe, that Ukraine deserves NATO membership because it has now been fighting Russia on Europe's doorstep for over 500 days.
Philip, has the summit helped or has it hurt Ukraine? I mean, does President Zelensky come away from the summit with anything tangible, any assurances about the future from this alliance that he so badly wants to be a part of?
He does somewhat, but things are a little bit vague because it is clear here that NATO membership will only start being discussed in earnest once the war ends between Ukraine and Russia. And I think we all know that wars don't end very easily these days. There isn't necessarily a ceasefire or a peace declaration. Can you imagine one between Ukraine and Russia right now? It is very hard to envisage that right now. And that is why there is that frustration from Ukraine about a lack of a timeline. But there is something to take home here for Volodymyr Zelensky. What he gets from NATO here are further security guarantees that are in fact being displayed right now as we speak by the G7 countries together with Ukraine. There will be more military help. There will be continued military aid from NATO member countries, with of course the United States at its helm. That is something that will continue. But of course, we've heard this throughout the war that Russia has waged on Ukraine. Ukraine wants more weapons. It wants them faster than it is receiving them right now. Today we heard Zelensky again calling for more long-range weapons. He will get some from France, for example. But of course, he wants and Ukraine needs more.
Now, Philip, this was billed from the start as a high-stakes summit that would reshape the security alliance, possibly change the course of Russia's war in Ukraine. How much of that has actually happened? I mean, beyond expansion, this sort of position that the NATO leaders have taken on Ukraine's future membership, beyond all of that, what has the summit actually accomplished?
Well, look, it feels a little bit more immediate, that is for sure. There is a war going on in Ukraine right now. This is only the second NATO summit that there has been since that war began, the first one having taken place last year in Madrid. Something concrete that has come out of this just happened a short while ago here. It is called the NATO-Ukraine Forum. It gives Ukraine a seat at the table together with all the other NATO member countries in cases of emergencies. That is a group that can meet. That is something tangible that Ukraine takes away from this, and a new council that has been created for NATO. But what we heard here from, for example, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, but also from US President Joe Biden before this summit even began here in Lithuania, that this was already a historic success, according to them. Why? Because NATO has been enlarged, because since the Russian invasion of Ukraine began, Finland has already joined as the 31st member. Sweden, it looks like, could join within the next few weeks if there is ratification in the Turkish parliament. So two new members since the Russian invasion of Ukraine began. That shows unity. That is certainly the point of view that NATO leaders have here in Lithuania.
Well, we'll leave it there. Philip Crowther, great to see you. Great reporting. Thank you very much. And that was AP correspondent Philip Crowther speaking to me there from the NATO summit in Lithuania. And we're going to take a short break here on Straight Talk Africa. And when we come back, how might the outcome of this NATO summit affect Africa as a region? My guests are standing by to discuss this, all of that, when Straight Talk Africa returns.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
The FIFA Women's World Cup 2023 is set to kick off in Australia and New Zealand. Morocco and Zambia are making their debut, while Nigeria, along with South Africa, make their triumphant return to the tournament. Yet all eyes will not only be on the playing field, but on FIFA itself. On this week's edition of Our Voices, we'll take a closer look at the upcoming Women's World Cup Games and see if FIFA will keep its promise to be more inclusive and pay big money to their female players. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
With Straight Talk Africa, welcome back. We're discussing a crucial summit of the North Atlantic Treaty underway in Lithuania. Now, NATO is a regional defense alliance, so of course African countries cannot join that alliance. But the decisions made at summits like these, especially around Russia's war in Ukraine, affect countries in the so-called Global South. So how will this NATO summit end up impacting Africa as a region? Well, joining me now to discuss this are Professor Kwaku Nwama from American University School of International Service, that's here in Washington, and joining us from Johannesburg, South Africa, is political analyst Marissa Lorenzo. Professor Marissa, a warm welcome to both of you. And Professor, I'm going to start out with you here. African countries, of course, as we said earlier, cannot join NATO because, of course, this is a regional security alliance. Professor, what does it tell us, or what does it reveal to us about the fact that Africa does not have a seat at the table when it comes to matters of global security, major military alliances, and issues that end up impacting the Africa as a region?
Well, thanks for having me. The NATO summit, as you already said, this is NATO is a private club. They have the right to invite who they want to invite. Africans are not members, so that's okay. But there are international forums where Africans have a say, and the big one, of course, the United Nations. That's where we should try and get a bigger role in the Security Council. But Africa has its own collective security systems, and those are the things that really matter. And the point is, African security really is determined by factors that are domestic, factors relating to good governance, economic development, and respect for human rights, and things like that. And so those are the things that we should pay attention to, not the decisions that are made in NATO, even though they impact some of the things that happen to Africa.
Marissa, I want to bring you in here. Of course, going off what the professor just said, what is your take on that? And what, in your view, should African countries be looking to glean from this NATO summit?
I think given the impact that the Russia-Ukraine conflict does have on Africa, it would have been nice to see some kind of representation. NATO has something called the Mediterranean Dialogue, which includes actually four countries in Africa, but in North Africa. It would be nice if there was something similar set up for sub-Saharan African countries so that there would be the opportunity for African leaders to voice their opinions on the matter and where they think that they can perhaps play a role, and perhaps also to explain the impact that the conflict is having on them, to make that much more known. I think that African leaders, just because of the impact that the conflict is having, especially on food security, I think they will be watching this quite closely, because the longer this drags on, the worse it effectively is. It's a global problem, and that includes Africa as well.
Professor, you mentioned earlier that, of course, Africa has its own regional mechanisms, more or less to this effect. But when we talk about the whole discussion around a possible seat for the African Union at the UN Security Council, how far would a seat like that go towards bringing more African voices into conversations that do revolve around military matters and sort of geopolitical dynamics, which currently, as we're seeing, does not work for everybody?
Oh, that would be a major step forward if we could actually do it. I don't think it's going to happen, but if that were to happen, it will really surface African concerns and provide another forum through which Africa can actually articulate its interests and push for policies that are responsive to our unique needs. So that's an avenue that needs to be pursued. The entire collective security, the post-Second World War collective security architecture needs major rethink and major reformation, and Africa should be a major part of that process, considering the fact that we have a majority of the votes in the General Assembly, and we are an important part of the future of the globe going forward. I think that Africa cannot be marginalized in any major security forum, and so that it's something that we should definitely look to push. Maybe the United States can help with that. At the Africa Summit, Joe Biden promised to get Africa representation in the G20 and other forums that matter. So those are some of the things that we can probably push for, and maybe we can get the Russians, they still sit on the Security Council, we can get them to also advocate for a greater African representation in the Security Council. That would actually make a significant difference, rather than simply going to a NATO summit, being in the margins, and nobody really taking what you say seriously.
Speaking of that, Professor, just a follow-up question here. I mean, to what extent is a seat on the UN Security Council a pipe dream? And to what extent can that actually and will it actually be a reality? Do you believe promises that Africa could potentially get representation, permanent representation on the UN Security Council?
In the short term, I don't think that's going to happen. But we've seen global dynamics change because the United States now needs allies in Africa. So African voices matter. And maybe this is our time. This is one of the issues that we can use as leverage to really, really push for representation. It's not impossible. We've seen changes in the Security Council. Russia, for example, is now a founding member. The seat that Russia occupies used to belong to the Soviet Union. The seat that China occupies used to belong to Taiwan. So we've seen things that can happen in the Security Council. We've seen, China expelled from the United Nations with a vote in the General Assembly. So things can be done. And Africans need to be strategic about this, and we need to explore those options, and we need allies. It's not just Africans that want a greater voice in the Security Council. It's the entire global South. The architecture is outdated, and so we need allies, and those allies are there. Brazil wants representation on there. Probably Germany should have representation on there as well. The future is Africa. By 2050, one out of four people on the planet will be in Africa. So we cannot be marginalized anymore. And I think that that's something that we need to push.
Professor, of course, you're right, as you rightly said. I mean, we will be well served to be reminded that, of course, the seats of China and Russia, they were not founding members as they are the shape that they are in today, of course. Marissa, is it realistic and practical to expect that the African Union represent Africa at the UN Security Council? Different countries with different views, different aspirations, different politics. Is that the only solution, to just have the African Union represent everyone?
No, I definitely think that certain countries should be given permanent seats on the UN Security Council. African countries do have a non-permanent seat, but of course it's not enough, and then it's rotating, so it only really lasts a year. To ask the African Union, or to expect the African Union to be able to represent all of these diverse interests, like you point out, I think is a very tall order. It is very difficult to find kind of common ground and to find unity in bringing, you know, effectively 54 voices together. It would be better if there could be representation along perhaps regional lines, working with regional blocs, things like that. But also, you know, states do compete against one another, which happens all over the world, including in Africa. And so getting everyone's interests aligned through one body, I don't think would be enough.
Professor, I know in the past that there has been cooperation between NATO and the African Union. But in your view, is it time that Africa had its own NATO-style alliance, its own mutual defense pact that everybody knows about and that meets as regularly as NATO does, although this has only been its second summit, but that meets annually and that grabs headlines to the same extent as NATO does?
Wait, Africa has one. It's called Africa Union, and leaders meet every year, and they talk, and we have all these protocols, and the problem is lack of enforcement, lack of funding, and countries are going to pursue bilateral arrangements and unilateral arrangements, but those regional approaches are there. You just have to find a way of enforcing them rather than just attending these annual summits into just, you know, talking sessions where nothing really, really gets done. But Africa has a lot of interesting protocols that are there with early warning and, you know, cooperation across the security fields, and you have the panel of the wise and the mediation committees. There's a whole bunch of stuff. We just have to fund it rather than ask other countries to pay our bills. We have to commit seriously to making security a priority, and we can do that. And countries also have to do some of this stuff at the domestic level, because that's where the problem really is. And again, if you take care of the issues at home, you prevent conflict. And it's always cheaper to prevent conflicts than to actually manage or resolve it.
Marissa, I want to change tack just a little bit. As far as I know, the Russia-Africa summit is still set to take place in St. Petersburg later this month. What do African countries who plan to go, what do they stand to gain from going, and what do they stand to lose from going?
So for the African countries that have recently severed ties with the UN, it is important that they go so that they do have at least one international actor that is in support of them. It's important that they continue to foster those ties, because they wouldn't want to be isolated if something had to go wrong in that regard. For African countries that are neutral, I think it is important that they go. Russia, its influence in Africa is not as, you know, dominant as it was decades ago, but it's still a very powerful global actor. And I think that for African countries, even though they've been asked to pick a side, it is important that they have been neutral. And it's important to hear, I guess, what everyone has to say and what everyone has to offer. We're not in a kind of Cold War scenario anymore where it's essential to pick a side. But then in terms of what they have to lose, I would have to say that I'm most worried about South Africa, because we've seen that the US has reacted quite strongly to South Africa's position on neutrality, and they've perceived it as effectively a slight against the US and a vote for Russia. And the problem with that is it's driving very negative sentiment in the market. We've had incidences where South Africa has been accused of supporting Russia, and the local currency has really dropped against the US dollar. So I think that South Africa attending that summit will weigh very, very heavily on sentiment towards the country, which then, you know, has a knock-on impact on the currency, which, you know, the country takes a knock for a few weeks and it bounces back, but it's taken several knocks already this year over this issue, and that's something that's concerning. Another thing for countries that still get that still import arms from Russia, I think it's also important for them to go. Again, because Russia is a very important supplier for security matters, so they would definitely need to have their presence there.
Professor and Marissa, please stay with me. We're going to take a short break, and we'll continue our discussion on the other side of that break. Stay with us. We're back in a moment.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're with Straight Talk Africa. Welcome back. We've been discussing the NATO summit that wraps up in Lithuania today and how the decisions made there affect African nations and whether Africa should have its own NATO-style mutual defense pact. My guests are political analyst Marissa Lorenzo and Professor Kwaku Nwama from the School of International Service at American University. Professor, we were discussing earlier the Russia-Africa summit coming up near the end of this month. Look, the Kremlin is, of course, trying to recover from a short-lived mutiny, but a mutiny nevertheless, but it also has a full-scale war that it has to finance. What can Moscow actually offer African nations right now?
Well, Moscow still controls Wagner, and Wagner is playing a major role in Africa right now. And one of the things that we have to watch is as you're getting Prigozhin and Putin patch up, and he's drawn further into this Ukraine war, African countries that depend on Wagner for security guarantees are going to start suffering. That's something that can be discussed. Even Wagner's role in Sudan should actually be addressed, because Wagner is playing a serious role in the Sudan conflict. But the other thing that is important is African countries need to go back to the Black Sea grain deal that they talked about a couple of weeks ago when they launched that mediation effort. We haven't seen any movement on that front. That's something that they should also try and see if they can get guarantees on grain and fertilizer exports, and also some general support from the Russians in the Security Council. They still have an important voice, so that's something that's also going to be important. But generally, I also want them to go back to some of the things that were agreed at Sochi in 2019. They came up with all these beautiful agreements that were not followed through. So we can't just keep holding summits if we're not going to implement the things that we said we're going to do. So they need to go back. If Russia really wants Africa's support in the United Nations, they have to show a commitment to things that matter to Africans. But it's up to Africans to make a demand. You got to come to these summits with a list of things that you want. And I'm looking forward to hearing African leaders ask for things that benefit their people rather than things that benefit them individually.
Marissa, there are summits being held left, right and center, enough to make everybody's head spin. Another one to look out for a little later this year, of course, or next month at least, is the BRICS summit. As things stand, are the South Africans expecting Russian President Vladimir Putin to come to South Africa for that summit? I know they have been in a bind about that. How do they feel right now?
So at the moment, what's been reported in local media is that Putin will not be attending in person. He will be attending virtually, which is really what the government here prefers, just to avoid everything that's going on with the ICC, the negative press, all of that. So it would really make a really big difference for South Africa if Putin doesn't come here. So at the moment, he's not expected to come. Of course, this can change, but I think that South Africa is very aware, or the government is very aware of what that would mean and the kind of risk that they would be taking in terms of the international standing. And yeah, so he's not expected to come. He's expected to attend virtually.
I can almost hear the collective sigh of relief within circles there, political circles in South Africa. Thank you so much, Marissa Lorenzo and Professor Kwaku Nwama. Thank you to both of you. And that is our show this week. Thank you so much for always joining us. A big thank you to all my guests and, of course, to our affiliate stations now carrying Straight Talk Africa across the African continent. Thank you for always watching and for always listening. You can find more news, all the latest news from across the continent on voanews.com and voaafrica.com. And I will see you next time. Until then, it's goodbye.